And a very good morning to you. 8:54, that temperature at 30 degrees, partly cloudy in the Meadow City today, and, well, a 10% chance, that's a slight chance of shower activity for today, calling for a high of 35 degrees. And a good morning to you, and welcome to our next show this morning, Writer's Block, with your host, Sharon Vandermeer. Good morning.
Good morning, Joseph.
How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you today?
Real good.
I'm running a little bit scattered today, and people who know me think that, well, so what's new about that?
You're running normal then, huh?
Yeah, that's right. I'm running normal. Anyway, I'm getting my breath now, and I'm delighted to welcome my guest this morning, Jose Vasquez, and we'll be talking to him this morning a little bit later. Good morning, Jose.
Good morning, Sharon. Good to be here today.
It's wonderful to have you.
Thank you so much.
And my calling guest will be a fellow by the name of Mark Tierno. I'm not sure where he's calling in from, but he has written an epic novel, and I'm telling you, it is epic. It's a two-volume novel entitled Maldine, and it's fascinating, interesting. I'm looking forward to talking to him when he calls in later. But first off, the quote of the day, this is now the third week. I hope someone will get it. Alice was beginning to get tired, very tired, of sitting by her sister on the bank and of having nothing to do. Once or twice she had peeped into the book her sister was reading, but it had no pictures or conversations in it. And what is the use of a book, thought Alice, without pictures or conversation? What famous novel starts with these words, and who wrote it? The first person to call in and tell us the correct answer will receive a PDF copy of my book on CD, Tiger Lily, a contemporary story about family relationships featuring a wonderful older woman who is a widow. Fascinating story. I think you will love it. Call in. Win it. And your writing prompt today is time is of the essence. So what am I going to do with today? Write a poem, essay, memoir, short story, or article using these words as the first line. No more than 250 words in length. Send it to me at P.O. Box 187, Las Vegas, New Mexico, or go to my website, www.vandermeerbooks.com, to see how to enter online. So the deadline for submissions is is February the 14th. So, you know, that's not the right one. It's supposed to be Love is in the Air. I picked up an old script. So it's actually the first line of the contest is, if you send something in that is time of the essence, so what am I going to do today? Boy, I'll love you for it.
Yeah, I thought you'd change that. I thought, well, is that the right one?
It's all right. Because it was tied to Valentine's Day, the other one. So, Joseph, I told you I was running crazy today.
I was going to tell you. You already set the stage when you made that statement.
You know, it's a thing called self, what is it called? Jose, help me here. It's called self.
Esteem? Wrong.
Wrong. It's actually called
self-programming.
Well, it's sort of like that, but anyway, if you say something that you're prophesying something, then it actually happens. So I prophesy that I'm running kind of self-fulfilling prophecy. That's the one. Thank you, Jose. So now that Jose has gotten me on track here. He is the winner of our first writing contest. It was the first snowstorm of the year. And so we're going to start with you saying howdy to everyone.
Hello, everybody. Hello, Las Vegas, New Mexico. This is your hometown boy,
that's
Jose
right.
Vasquez.
He grew up here, has a big family, and has a lot more to his background in writing than I had any idea of when he entered this contest. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I started out in high school writing a very bad essay that practically ended everything. And as time went on, early rock and roll was pouring out of KFUN, and we were very excited about that. And, you know, it wasn't the Beatles. It was Buddy Holly and Ricky Valens, those guys. And I'm dating myself.
You and I are about that same era. So
It was a wonderful
Roy
time.
Oberson, my goodness.
Exactly. Yeah. So I fashioned myself a songwriter.
Oh.
And eventually did an album with 10 of my songs. and really enjoyed that. So that was kind of my first foyer into writing.
Do you have that up, Joseph?
I sure do.
We're going to hear a little bit of that album.
Okay.
Okay.
Is that? I have cut one, so we'll see what that is.
Can you do cut eight?
Cut eight. All right. Here we go.
This is about a woman with very hazel, very green eyes. It's entitled Emeralds in Her Eyes.
Okay. I think it's queuing up. There you go.
I like the music.
I have looked at you through the eyes of who I wanted you to be. Tried to make you see. I have looked at you through the eyes of who I wanted you to be. So blind I couldn't see what you needed most from me.
Very nice. Very
Thank
nice.
You, Sharon.
I love that. I like the music. You wrote the lyrics.
I wrote the lyrics. I did all of the music except the bass and the drum parts.
Uh huh. And who's the singer? Are you the singer?
I'm the singer. I did both the vocal and the harmony.
Wow!
So I was a very busy man.
You were you were dancing pretty fast. Well, I love that. That's really
Thank
wonderful.
You.
Is that available anywhere?
It's available at KFUN as of right now.
Well, Jay Harris called saying that he has that on a 45, and the picture on the cover is you're holding a rose.
Close enough. There is a rose in the picture.
Okay.
Wow, that's really pretty. So it sold.
It apparently. Sold a little bit.
Yeah, good.
He said a 33 and a half.
33 and a half, yeah.
Okay.
Vinyl. I'm way back there. I'm one of the old school.
So that sort of is an example of some of your writing.
That's right.
That's great.
I work with a little trio right now, the Carlos Aguirre Trio.
Uh-huh.
And we play around Santa Fe.
Uh-huh.
We consider it a ministry. We play at churches. We play at nursing homes. Occasional private party and occasional wedding. But we have a lot of fun with the music.
Sure.
I'm now a bass player. You know, the old guy in the back playing the bass, that's Jose.
Well, do you still sing?
Yes,
what
I sing tenor harmony with the
What
trio.
A wonderful voice you have. I had no
you.
Idea. Wonderful.
Thank you very much.
So what prompted you to enter this contest?
I was sitting here. My dad passed away about 3 weeks ago. I was here often caring for him and listening to your program. And I heard the contest. I was sitting on the couch frustrated with my other writings. And I'm sitting there thinking, now if I wrote a cowboy story, what would that be like? If I wrote a mystery, what would that be like? And, you know, I'm sitting there with my laptop and started banging away at this thing, and pretty soon I entered a contest.
Well, I want you all to know, and I really expected to have a little more of a response to these contests than I've had, but Jose, at this point, is being the only one who has entered these writing contests.
And let me tell you a little story about that.
I love this.
I happened to be in San Francisco with a friend of mine. We were doing open microphones when I get this email that says, the good news is you won the contest. The bad news is you were the only entry.
But so it was a good entry. It was a great entry.
So I went in and into the nightclub and announced, you know, I'm the big winner, but I'm the only one. From Las Vegas, New Mexico. And, of course, afterwards they're saying, Sin City, huh? Gambling, huh?
Yeah, right.
No, wait. Original, historic Las Vegas,
right.
New Mexico.
So what about writing it for this contest? Did you like? Was there anything, I mean, was it just sort of an impetus for you to get writing again?
Well, I'll tell you, in writing it, it was a joy to play around with words. I've always loved words. You know, E.E. Cummings turned me on to poetry back when. Mm-hmm. And so just playing with words and how words are used, you know, cowboy story versus Harlequin romance. Mm-hmm. And so I tried to get the essence of that in entering the contest.
Okay. And you did a great job of that. Jose's going to read his entry, which is really, really a lot of fun.
It was the first snow of the year. Maybe I'll write a cowboy story. It was the first snow of the year. The crunch beneath his boots revealed the steady pace of a determined cowboy out to feed the cattle, check the fence, saddle up the horse. An uneasiness swept over cowboy as he examined the sky. Fresh fallen snow. Well, Tony Hillerman, maybe I'm not. How about a mystery? It was the first snow of the year. Clues had been left behind in the blanket of white. But there, where were the clues to be found in the fresh snow as well? How could the abduction have taken place? Too easy, he thought, too smooth. Who could the murderer be? Perhaps unnoticed, they were gone without a trace. What about that candelabra missing in the parlor? No, that won't work. No Agatha Christie here. How about a Harlequin romance? It was the first snow of the year. Laura looked lovingly at the flakes that drifted across her window. The porch swing sat empty now, filled with columns of white, while they recently had watched the fall colors that gave way to the first snow. What was happening? Her heart couldn't understand why. Why? Why was he not here in her arms again? Oh, romance longing may not be my strong suit anyway. How about something deep south, like Gone with the Wind? No, wait. No snow in the south. Darn. I've got to write a poem. It was the first snow of the year. Went to get a beer. No, wait. Start over. This is the poem. It was the first snow of the year. Gone the golden color which fall had draped himself, and the green that she spring had given us. Distant now are the colors of summer. For now, favored drifts of white are what winter's coat graces.
Very nice.
Thank you.
And that is the writing process, folks, right there.
Start and start again.
That's right. Rethink and rethink and rethink again. So, yeah, that was really, it was a great entry. I thought it was fantastic, and you did a great job. And thank you for entering.
Thank you, Sharon.
Folks, if you enter this contest and win, you get to come on the air and talk about your writing and get to have an opportunity to kind of explore who you are as a writer a little bit, too. Thank you, John Goodwin, for calling in. You are the winner of the PDF copy of Tiger Lily on CD, and he did get the answer, and the answer is Alice in Wonderland by Lewis Carroll. Thank you for calling in, John. Now then, we are going to move on to some of your other writing. You told me you have written a children's book, and you've also written a biography of your dad, who just passed away about, 3 weeks ago?
That's right.
Yeah. Uh-huh. For those of you who don't know, and I think most of you do, Jose is the son of J.D. Vasquez, who is quite well known here in Las Vegas. J.D. was an educator. Very prominent in the community, remembered for his compassion, his focus on learning and how important education is to people being more than they could be. And this book that he's written, very well expresses the history of J.D. and also the man that he was.
Yes, you know, over the years, Dad would tell an occasional story. He grew up in Chacon, New Mexico, which is north of Mora. And Dad had an interesting life because he was born in Chacon in what they call Little Alaska. He would tell me an occasional story, like his first fishing pole was actually the hair of a horse's tail on which he fastened a hook. And we'd go down to the river that ran through this property, and he was an avid fisherman for the rest of his life. I began to realize maybe 15, 20 years ago that when this generation goes, those stories are gone unless we get them now.
Yep.
So over the years, Dad would tell a little story. I'd run home and make a note. And about a year ago, I decided, if I don't put this together, Dad, now, Dad will never see it. Mm-hmm. So I have a little booklet of his life, stories that he's told. It's called Dad Said, The Life and Times of Jose D. Vasquez, Jr. And I'd like to read a little bit of the introduction and then skip over to our church life here in Las Vegas. It's a cold winter morning in the high Rocky Mountain valleys in northern New Mexico. 5-foot-high snowdrifts at an altitude of 8,700 feet make travel almost impossible. In an isolated schoolhouse, two small boys have lit a wooden burning stove. They are now playing basketball across a wooden floor that will soon serve as their classroom, lunchroom, and playground. This is the scene of El Rito Mission School, a Presbyterian outpost that would furnish the lives of that would fashion the lives of these boys. They would grow up to exemplify the values and precept honed in the school. One would grow up to serve as an educator, the other as a minister of the gospel. One of those boys was my father, Jose Domingo Vasquez, Jr. And this is jumping ahead to a chapter entitled Church Every Sunday. The historic church that began in Las Vegas in 1869 with Reverend Anin and Reverend Perea became the family's church home. It continued to provide spiritual depth and understanding in the original First Presbyterian Church of Las Vegas. Growing up, what characterized the church on the hill on Chavez Street in Old Town was the services in Spanish. Reverend Frank Pius, a Spaniard by birth and former priest, was the pastor. Hymns were sung in Spanish, and the sermons were always preached in Spanish. The church had tremendous character. 3-foot adobe walls with receding windows surround the sanctuary. A wood-burning stove below the dais provided heat for the worshipers. The steeple held an 831-pound bell shipped by rail and wagon from Troy, New York. A rope that hung in the vestibule rang the bell. It was always a treat as a boy to be allowed to ring the bell for Sunday services. The upswing of the rope could lift a boy off the floor if his timing was right. Following Reverend Pius's retirement, my father's boyhood friend, Reverend Tomas Gonzalez, assumed the ministry. The traditional service in Spanish continued for a long period. Reverend Gonzalez's ministry, but at some point they decided one sermon a month would be preached in English, and that Sunday hymns would be sung in English. Times were beginning to change.
That bell is now in the belfry at the Presbyterian Church on Douglas Avenue.
That's right.
And you can still pull it, and some of those little boys can actually still ride that rope up.
And it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
That's a wonderful tribute to your dad. I know that you also write I did not know that until this morning, so I don't want to claim knowledge I didn't have. You write a blog? A regular blog.
That's right. My current employer is a nonprofit in Santa Fe, New Mexico, called the Barnabas Institute. And what we do is we write a Christian newsletter. We call all the churches in Santa Fe and ask them what's going on. The ministry started because we discovered that Santa Fe, in fact, is a Christian community. 85% of the people in Santa Fe, this is our own research, grew up in a Christian home. 65% of them claimed Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And when we moved back to New Mexico, we were looking for a church. And the question was, where are all the Christians? You know? Mm-hmm. And so we were prompted to begin this little newsletter. Mm-hmm. So along with the newsletter on our website, it's an e-newsletter, by the way. I also write what's called a weblog or a blog. Mm-hmm. And their little uplifting little essays, I was very much pleased to see your book, Sharon, today, because it was along the same lines.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's just supporting people in their Christian walk,
right.
Making observations about our day,
mm-hmm.
and just appreciating the goodness of the Lord in our lives.
Mm-hmm. Jose is referring to Not Just Another Day, which is a book of daily meditations that I wrote, and which is available at Tome on the Range. and so that takes up your time, but you also do other writing. What are some of the other things? Oh, you have something from your blog that you wrote?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
You know, I picked out one that it is really relevant to Las Vegas. We, as a family, were taking care of Dad, Mom and Dad in their home for a number of years, and I'd come back and forth and spend some time. And this particular time, I was walking around. I get up in the morning and take a little walk. And this particular morning, I walked from my dad's home on 4th Street back to our old place, the home I grew up in, a little adobe on 2nd Street. And this is called Pathways. It's about that particular morning. I visited my hometown, a little town I grew up in recently. I walked past the grade school, the brick building that replaced a much older stone building. From my old school, I started, quote, started home again, back to the house I grew up in. The empty lot along the way was still there. It was weed covered more than ever. I walked into the field looking for where I might have trod as a boy, and sure enough, there was a path beaten long ago, still cutting through the growth. Our family home is up for sale now, and no one lives there. I ventured into the backyard where I played hoop for what seems like endless hours. Back then, there was a long path back to the fence where the trash was stored. Sure enough, I could make out where the path had been as well. Discovering these paths might not surprise anyone, but given that they were relics of my boyhood past, it meant something to me. It got me to thinking about other paths I'd trodden. So not so good, some, and some marginal, and some to be cherished. After a long time, it wasn't hard to figure out some of the ones that sustained me through life. That list was much shorter than all the others. I remember reading the Bible with my sisters and my parents. I remember church on Sunday morning. I remember prayer. Those were the paths, after a long while, that I came back to. Those were the paths well worth treading.
How do people find your blog?
The long title is barnabasinstitute.com, but the short one is barnin.com.
Okay. I will post that on my website when I do the summary of this program today. So be sure and give me that information before you leave, or is this it?
It's on the card.
You gave me a card, so hopefully I will get this all correct. I know that, and you do this daily, right?
Not quite daily.
Okay.
When I can get to it.
Oh, okay. All right. I have multiple blogs, which is a mistake because I don't then write in them. But I do know that being a blogger, it takes a real commitment. You do have to kind of, if you want to have readers anyway, you have to kind of change them with some regularity, or update them rather with some regularity. So
yes.
I admire you for taking that on and to do it regularly. And I'll become one of your followers, because
okay.
I think every blogger wants to have followers, let me tell you.
I enjoy it tremendously.
Good. Well, it is a lot of fun.
Sharon?
Yes.
Jose, somebody called asking if you could give a contact number for you, or how people can reach you, because somebody wants to know.
It's area code 505-438-0437. And the email address, the program is called the Center for Christian Community, C4CC. So the email address is c4cc@comcast.net.
Okay, and I will post that information on my website, which is www.vandermeerbooks.com. I don't do it the same day, but I am trying to regularly post a summary of the program for people. And I've had a lot of people say they've heard it once and they've heard parts of it, but because it comes on at working time, they can't always listen to all of it. So I try to sort of summarize what happened on the program. And Joseph and I are trying to work out the technicalities of figuring out how to record it in such a way that I can upload it to the program to my site for people who do want to listen to it again or for the first time. We were talking about you also write children's stories, and you have brought one with you. That's calligraphy. Isn't that? Or is that just normal? It's beautifully written. Go ahead. Oh,
thank you.
And the name of the story is?
The King Who Wanted to Be the Court Jester.
Oh, I love that. The title alone is beautiful. And Jose said this will take about 5 minutes. So
yes.
Everyone, if you have a minute to sit down and relax and enjoy The King Who Wanted to Be a Court Jester.
Just a little background. When I completed my education, I was tight as a screw, you know. I just had so much tension in my body, and I continued my work career, and I got to thinking about the fact that, you know, we have very stressful jobs, and there has to be a way of managing your employment and at the same time really enjoying what you're doing, you know, moving in the direction of just having a joyous experience. So this is a little story about a king who was concerned about his not having fun. Once upon a time, there was a king who ruled over many lands. He was a very powerful king and had many worthy advisors. They would tell him many things, all of which appeared to be very, very wise. His wife, the queen, was always very proper, and the prince and princesses, as most children, were often just themselves. The young maidens of the land and the young men saw the king with much awe. The people paid their taxes, and the affairs of state were always handled with regal dignity. The king, from all appearances, had the finest of provisions and the grandest of stations. There was just one problem. The king pondered the problem for a very long time, and it came down to this. He wasn't having any fun. The advisors talked of wars and taxes, and the queen was constantly preparing for royal gatherings. The children played, and the people undertook their daily toil. True, he was the king and made kingly decisions about wars and taxes, and he demanded order in his court, and he had the governors deal properly with the children, and often he would express his love to his wife, the queen. Yet something was wrong. He wasn't having any fun. As the king pondered the problem, he reviewed his court. Who was having fun? He watched his advisors. They were so serious. He watched his wife, the queen. She was so busy. He watched the children. Ah, they appeared to be free, but alas, they were sent to bed. He watched the people, and they toiled. The king had just about given up. It was no fun being king. But there was no other one enjoying the court either. He sat back. Then he noticed. A man came up to him, shook a bell in his face, and grinned. It was the court jester. The court jester danced and sang and danced and sang and told the king of himself, and the king grinned back. That's who I want to be, he whispered to himself. For a long time, the king forgot about the idea, but he continued to notice the court jester. One day, without warning, after dealing with the burdensome affairs of state, the idea popped into the king's mind. The idea returned at an appropriate time, for the jester had gone to a distant homeland to visit his family and would not return for many days. The king seized the opportunity. He snuck off to the jester's quarters, found his closet, and with much happiness tried on some of the jester's clothes. The jester wore a pointy hat with bells, not a heavy crown. His jacket fit snugly and comfortably with fit fringes, not a heavy, regal robe. His pants and shoes had much the same stylish flair. The king felt happy. Cautiously, he tiptoed down the hall and into his royal chambers. No one jumped and silenced and bowed as he expected. When he entered the chamber, the shock of the noise when he expected silence was almost too much. But he soon got over that and began to look around. Everything was pretty much the same as it had been when he was king. There was one major difference. No one noticed him, the king. Once again, the king felt bad and almost ended the charade. But he stopped himself and didn't. No one noticed. He, however, noticed everyone. There was the court advisors in his absence, discussing affairs of state and giving each other advice. There was the queen, looking radiant and beautiful, but oh, so busy. There were the prince and princesses, scurrying about and being minded after by the governesses. There were the people, working, but not quite so hard. A deep sorrow began to fall over the king. No one noticed him. He started to leave and stopped. A ball the children had been playing with rolled to his feet. Instead of a noisy governess fetching it and quieting the children, no one came. The king stooped and he threw the ball back. No one noticed. No one noticed the jester king. He laughed a little more. No one was going to notice him. A flood of joyous laughter came pouring forth. From that moment on, the king enjoyed himself. He sang, he laughed, he ate at the king's table, not at the head. He made fun of his advisors and the queen and the governesses, and he played with the children. The king told jokes, he rang bells in people's faces, and he grinned and grinned and grinned. He had fun. The day grew long, and the court grew weary. The king knew the charade had to come to an end. He walked away back to the jester's chambers and lay down in the jester's cot. The king thought and thought about what the jester knew. Late that evening, the king dressed himself and returned to his now dark, now empty royal chambers. Things would always be the same in the court. Things would never be the same for the king. At last, the king knew what the court jester knew. He would always be the king. That really didn't matter. He, the king, would enjoy himself. He would have fun. He would be happy. He would have fun.
Have you tried to have, you gotten this published? Have you?
Self-published. Okay. You and I are self-published.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. But to me, that's published. If you self-publish, that's yes. That's published. Is it in book form? Can people access it? Can they?
They can give me a call.
Okay. Well, it is a wonderful story, and I think that it tells us a lot about not only the importance of getting rid of stress, but when we get rid of it, sometimes that's a surprise too, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. You know? It's a whole readjustment.
Right. Right. So it's a wonderful story.
Thank you.
What else did you want to talk about? What else is going on?
Well, there's plenty. Another thing we do is we monitor the New Mexico State Legislature.
Uh-huh.
My wife and I, again, when we came to Santa Fe, were really surprised that there was not more of a commitment on the part of the Santa Fe Church and the New Mexico Church to be involved. And we've since developed a little program where we sit in on committees and talk to people mm-hmm. about the legislation from a Christian perspective.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We've helped another organization. It's called Traditional Values New Mexico, TVACNM.com. And they put out alerts for legislation that the Christian community should be concerned about.
Mm-hmm. So made aware of.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Have you thought about writing a book?
You know, I have trouble with short-term memory. And long-term projects are a little difficult. I'm actually involved right now in a program called the Centurions Program.
Mm-hmm.
And it's taking all of my wife and I's time. It is a training brought on from the Prison Fellowship.
Oh, okay.
Chuck Colson is the the sponsor of the program. And we're involved in in-depth reading, analysis of policy. And we had a wonderful webalog last night with Joan Tada. I'm missing some of her name. But Joni is quadriplegic.
Oh,
she's
uh-huh.
a Christian woman who has a huge ministry. She speaks it at various events and presented to us ministering to the disabled. Mm-hmm. It was a wonderful program. And that's an example of the kind of study that we're involved in right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll run till May. I'm looking at another music program. I'm wanting to do my second album after all
Let's
these
see,
years.
When was the last time you did an album?
I don't want to say. I was still in San Francisco. The picture on the cover is me in Golden Gate Park with the now infamous Rose. No, it's been it was vinyl. Let's just leave it at that.
Okay, so it was a day or two ago.
Yes.
Is this going to be Christian music? Is that what you're...
I'm looking at both a Christian album, and our little trio plays traditional Spanish music. It's a lot of fun.
Uh-huh.
When I was in San Francisco, I ran across a man whose repertoire included 38,000 songs. And I asked him, do you know Historia de mi Amor? And he sat down and played this wonderful accompaniment to my not yet quite ready for prime time vocal. But it was fun, and that's also in the works.
Yeah, well, wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming
today, you,
Jose. I really appreciate it. And learning more about you, I mean, gosh, I've known you, but I certainly did not know about this aspect of your background and of your passion. I think that that seems to be, you do have a passion for writing, for the service that you provide through your Christian ministry, and also just from the joy you have every day. You just have one of those faces that you just know immediately that this is a happy man.
Thank you so much, Sharon. It's a blessing to be back in Las Vegas, and I'll tell you, it's a blessing to be from Las Vegas as well. God bless you all.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jose. Nice meeting you.
We'll be talking to our call-in guest here in just a moment. Joseph, do you have something that you need to say first, like who we are and where we are?
Well, we are in Las Vegas, New Mexico, Sharon. And this is KLVF FM 100.7 and KFUN AM 1230 on your radio dial. And to those of you listening to us on our website at KFUNonline.com, we welcome you. I see that we do have several people that have logged on. And the background, you're hearing a little bit of one of Jose's songs. And Sharon, we do have your guest on the phone, by
All right.
the way.
Thank you.
Mark
Thank
is on
you
there.
Much. Good. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Mark Tierno, am I saying that correctly?
You're one of the few people that do.
Oh, good. Well, I'm improving, Joseph, as the day goes on. So Mark is a sci-fi writer, and it kind of streams into fantasy. Am I right?
Yeah, I figure there's enough people doing fantasy or science fiction. I love doing cross-genre stuff because I love them both, so
okay.
I figure... Why not?
All right. Let's start out by telling our audience a little bit about yourself.
Well, I have a master's in physics, strong science background. I love fantasy and science fiction since about as long as I could read. Spent about most of my adult life caring for a Parkinson's-stricken father.
Oh.
Pretty much all I had time to do at home after I discovered I could write was, let's try doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And that pleased people. My mom began smiling again. It's like, hey, our brilliant son can write. We can go with this. So I just began, I've cranked out right now my fantasy with science fiction series Moldine is like 13 books. And then Cyber Dawn is sort of the other way around. That's science fiction, conspiracy with some fantasy. That's like 5 books. I just kept writing, and I've hit like 8 million words so far.
I think I read this correctly. You said that on a good day you can write 12,000 words.
That's actually my average.
I have to tell you.
I've actually... Yeah, I've actually peaked as high as over 15,000 words on a really good chapter.
You must be, I mean, you start at dawn and don't quit until the next dawn, because that's a lot of writing.
Well, I want to see how it ends.
Of course.
And I get into it and excited and the music's going. Next thing I know, it's like 8 to 10 hours.
Yeah, yeah. Maldine is massive. I mean, it's almost overwhelming in scope. How did you come up with this idea? And tell people what Maldine is. I don't want to jump into it without giving some people some. And I have not read it. I confess. I looked at it, and it's kind of pricey.
Yeah, I don't set the price, unfortunately, but I'm trying to change that.
Yeah.
Maldine is a world like billions of light years away from here, many times larger than Earth. It has three moons. It's a world that has on the surface of it, it's a world of magic and fantasy and all that neat stuff. Beneath the surface, there's a lot more going on, as the characters will begin to find out throughout the series. Mm-hmm. I do blend fantasy and science fiction in there. The big running plot for this is there's the evil, most villainous person ever known, and his name is Myro.
Myro.
The gods fear him. And he wants something, and no one's really sure what his plans are, but he's been around since about as long as people know of his history. And that little qualifier is important, because it turns out there's a lot more to their history than meets the eye, and that's where the real plot begins.
And in the development of this, now, how many pages are these two volumes? Because when I looked online, it was two volumes. The book.
That's because my current publisher decided they didn't want to try for 800-page paperback.
Yeah.
The two volumes which comprise of the first novel is mm-hmm. about 330,000 words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is about twice what anybody would even dare.
Right.
But people who have read it have never complained about the length, except mm-hmm. one guy said, "I want more."
Yeah, but it would seem that the concept could be broken up into more than two installments, because it seems to me like, in just reading your synopsis of the novel, it seems like there's so much meat to what the story is that you could almost do. And reduce the cost per book. I mean, in the end, you might end up paying that ultimate price, but people could take it in smaller bites, if you will.
Well, that's the thing, is remember that this is Volume 1 and 2 together are the first book of the series.
Mm-hmm.
The next question you want to ask me is how big the series is.
How big is the series?
13 books. That's
wow.
About 5.2 million words. There's about 250 characters slung throughout the thing. It's mm-hmm. It pretty much redefines the word epic.
So have people just hearing that been sort of daunted? I mean, that takes a commitment on the part of the reader as well as the writer, of course, to have actually produced that. I mean, I'm admiring you for taking this on. My goodness gracious! But one of the things that you want to do as a writer is be able to sell your work. You're growing a following, I'm assuming.
I'm working on it. I'm not too particularly good at PR, which is why I finally got some help. But
mm-hmm.
I figure there's a whole generation of Harry Potter guys out there that are
used
to these really massive books, and they're in their 20s right now.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, science fiction and fantasy readers, people that like a really good story, they really aren't too concerned about, the book's too long.
In fact, I know.
Some of them just go, "Give me more."
That's true. Yeah, Dune was not a short undertaking either, so.
No, not by any means.
No.
I've read most of those books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there, of course, and I guess I was sort of thinking along the lines of, and now I should have written these things down when I was thinking about them last night, but, you know, the series novels where science fiction particularly, or fantasy, they just kind of have survived, if you will, for years and years and years because the characters are so strong. The world that has been developed is so unique and intriguing. So it's not beyond imagination that you would make this a success. Your website is fascinating. I mean that.
Yeah, it recently got a redesign head to toe, as part of my new push for everything. As far as there's even now, there's some pretty big books out there. If you've ever seen Wheel of Time or The Sword of Truth.
Those
things are huge.
They are. And those were the two I was thinking of last night when I was going, you know, looking on the web and, you know, trying to find things that were sort of comparable to what you're doing. Those were a couple of the Wheel of Time was one of the ones that is that what it's called, the Wheel of Time? It was one of the ones that I saw. And of course, they're really intricate, detailed books. And they require some commitment on the part of the writer to really pursue keeping those storylines vibrant, I think, because that's what part of what I think in series novels is hard to do, is trying to keep the storyline vibrant and keep the characters alive. Do you find that a challenge?
Well, for me, it's almost instinctive in that... I'm the one that writes it. I'm the one that re-edits it like six different times. Mm-hmm. I have to go through all that and not get bored.
Yeah, well, that's true.
So it's my own self-interest to think of new ways of doing things and different ways of getting the characters out of things and different ways of describing things, so I don't get bored.
Mm-hmm.
If the reader happens to enjoy it at the same time, hey, that's great.
Yeah. Well, I think writers do write for. Write for readers. I want people to read my work and enjoy it, and I think most writers do. So what kind of comments do you get from people who, other than I'd like to see more, what kind of comments do you get from people?
Well, I've had one guy, he's a retired copy editor turned author, and he's like Nova Scotia, and his first comment on there, he had several questions like, how do I keep track of all the characters, because I have a ton of them and their descriptions and they're all unique. And he also remarked on how I keep up different ways of getting them out of the same out of different solutions.
Mm-hmm.
Like they don't always cast the same spell, and I get rather inventive on my fight sequences because it looks great in the movie for, you know, sword fight and parry, thrusto, parry.
Mm-hmm.
But describe that in the book and it really gets boring after a while.
It sure does.
So I have one guy that turned into part acrobat, so he leaps and lands on the back of a moving horse and slashes the sword from side to side, and just different creative ways of doing it. And,
mm-hmm.
and the Nova Scotia guy is always commenting about the creativity on that, and also how my world is put together. There's been comments about the whole ecosystem and ecology, because I have extensive notes on even down to weather patterns and everything mm-hmm. about the place, so anything I can draw upon.
When did you...
And in fact, the guy in Nova Scotia was so impressed that he's now editing book 5.
Wonderful.
Would you like to try and find my typos? And I'm always getting comments back from him on that. I love this. I never would have guessed that. And,
mm-hmm.
and how do you keep track of all this? And I told him, easy, writer's best friend, database.
Yes, indeed. Keep track.
When you have that many characters, you need a database.
Yeah, I have one of the writers in the past that I've interviewed. She said she has a spreadsheet. She doesn't have nearly as many characters as you have, and her writing is in period writing in like the 18th century. But she said she keeps a spreadsheet, and that way she can follow both along the timeline and then down by character who did what when. And I think that, you know, we all have to have those strategies to keep track of what's going on. So your database must be absolutely massive.
Well, I actually have, when I'm writing, I have the word processor and two databases going up. One is about the characters,
mm-hmm.
and I have it down to eye color if I need it.
Well,
every
good.
Little detail.
That's
more
true.
Detail than I need, which is good. And the other one is I invented... my own local language, and I have like about a couple hundred words in it right now. So
mm-hmm.
I have that database up in case I want somebody to cuss in Molinese or something, and I'll look up real fast,
mm-hmm.
or put together some other phrase. Like there's one scene actually in Molding 2 where you have a person coming down from another world, and they're used to tech, and they're seeing all this magic stuff. And I do it from her point of view, so I wrote out the entire scene, what they were trying to say to her, and then translated every single word into Maldenese.
My goodness gracious. Okay. So when did you start writing this? When did you embark on this journey?
That would have been about when I first began hitting the keyboard, about 1996.
Okay.
I'd begun putting it together in my head over the years for about the previous 15 years.
Yeah. So has anything, or what has changed, or has anything changed from, I mean, this did not bloom full-blown in your brain when you started writing it in 1996. How has it changed over time?
Well, when I first started writing, at that point I knew what the plot for the first book was going to be, and I had sort of mapped out in my head the rest of the mess.
Mm-hmm.
After I finished book one, then I sat down and thought to myself, okay, let's break this down into what goes in which book.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some things that did change, the basic like skeleton of the structure was always the same. Some of the details, of course, I added to as I go along.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one for, like, book 10, the outline I initially had was pretty much the title of the book,
mm-hmm.
and that was The Chaos Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew where it started and where it was going to end, and, you know, my notes was pretty much, insert a lot of mess here. That was about the hardest one to write, because I had to get really creative, and there's, like, space fleets and everything, and
uh-huh.
one point I turned around and just got really creative on ship design.
Uh-huh.
Like an asteroid that's pretty much a ship that's an asteroid with an engine and a gun, for one. Somebody else, a sailing ship that with magic spells makes it fly through space, and
mm-hmm.
another one, the hull was made of plasma.
So
different things like that, and
right.
that inspired what the races would be like to have them.
So the meteor that is the warship, I guess, a warship, a war.
Yeah, that one ended because I thought, okay, what sort of race would want to just use a big asteroid and have, mm-hmm. you know, like the guns like they have
oh,
a thyroid
asteroid,
problem.
I'm sorry, okay.
Yeah, and I figured, okay, rock trolls.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. All right.
Pretty evolved, a rock troll race, you know, mm-hmm. and I use logic and everything, so a sequence of events, I figured if I insert this here, I'll logically figure out what the ramifications are going to be, and that
mm-hmm.
affects the details of the plot further down.
Sure. So you kind of, your stories spring from the character development so much, not so much, or?
There is some, as characters develop, they might influence how I carry out the details of the plot, but overall, plot is king.
Yeah.
I have the plot first. If I want to make a point on something, it's always going to be plot first, and if I can squeeze in, you know, some little message or something somewhere, if it's appropriate,
mm-hmm.
then fine.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to make sense from the plot first.
Of course.
And then the characters interacting, that'll affect how the plot gets carried out.
Right. I've been interested in watching a particular group discuss how many words must a novel be. And I'm always kind of curious about that, because it's not so much the word count, it's the story that matters.
Yeah, it's as long as it needs to be.
Right.
I've read short stories that seemed like they were way too long, and I've read really long books that I just wanted more of.
Right, right.
So it doesn't matter on word count. It's, you know, some stories need to be told in a long way.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, and especially if you can make them interesting and entertaining and make the reader want to read more. I think that certainly... is something that we aspire to as writers.
I had one guy, he's my beta reader now, and he's a friend of mine, and he went, okay, I'll read your manuscript there. He'd been putting it off, and like most friends, a bit critical. And he burned out the entire weekend. The
mm-hmm.
entire volume one and two, it's like he comes back and went, you lost me 3 days, but it was great.
Well, it wasn't lost. He had a good time.
Since then, he's read the entire series about 12 times each.
Oh, my goodness.
And he's still finding little details that I put in there, because I love putting in details and clues and
uh-huh.
little plot hints here and there.
Yeah. So you're not done by any means. You're continuing to write
well,
this.
Well, I have all 13 books written.
Okay.
As well as a two-book prequel, and then I have some other series already written. I find a better publisher, and I can keep them busy for about 15 years.
Right.
Just what I have now.
Right. So you went with Publish America. It seemed that's what the publisher was for what I was looking at anyway. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And now you're looking for another option.
Yeah. The last few years I've been going through a few problems. There was like a couple personal problems that kept my attention away from things.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
Now I'm finally, you know, getting back into the swing of things and realizing, you know, I need somebody whose idea of marketing isn't trying to sell stuff back to the author.
Well, that's unfortunately what the self-publishing business is all about. And if you go into that knowing that, I think that you have a step up. But
yeah, except they don't advertise themselves as self-publishing. They go, we're a real old-fashioned legitimate publisher.
I know. From my experience, you're better off going with a really good self-publisher and knowing then at the outset that you're going to have to be paying for certain things, and is it worth that investment to you to do that?
Yeah.
As opposed to someone who promises things that they're not going to deliver. Have you been a writer all your life? Did I understand you to say that correctly? You just sort of, this is something that you took up in 1996.
I've been scrolling around the stories in my head for about 15 years,
mm-hmm.
and actually when I was like 11 or 12, I wasn't actively intending to be a writer, but I saw myself sort of taking notes anytime I'd read a story, and I'd go,
mm-hmm.
I like the way he did that, and scroll that away in the back of my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew by the time I was 19, it's like, okay, I have this story I'm going to get, and I want a certain type of feel for it. I figured I want some of the descriptions to be like almost quasi-poetic sort of
mm-hmm.
style.
Yeah.
And I just took me a while to put things together, and then when I had some spare time, I went, hey, I can finally get that down. I guess maybe I was a writer my entire life, I just didn't know it.
Not until 1996, and then it came out full-blown, huh?
I had it ready.
Yeah. With your background, your education, does that kind of help you? Because I think that being a having a master's in physics and being a math whiz and doing all those other sort of very technical things, does that help you in your writing? Because what you have written, a lot of it is very detailed and technical. And
it definitely helps in that I end up being my own research material.
Uh-huh.
I don't have to look up and figure out, okay, how could mm-hmm. I get this to happen physically? And I tend to put a bit of, like, certain laws of science or something, as it were, behind how magic operates.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, once I define the laws of how magic works, then I can figure out how they interact with the tech and everything else.
Okay.
So just the whole training and figuring things out and logic and also knowing ahead of time all this physics stuff.
Right.
I don't have to go to a library. I just keep typing along because I know this stuff anyway.
It's in your head. You don't have to go. Yeah. You don't have to Google anything.
I'm the research material.
The plot synopsis for Maldine starts out with these words. The world of Maldine is one of fantasy and secrets. This first novel, a mere introduction to a distant world, heavily steeped in the ways of magic. The story focuses on a group of adventurers and the path destiny sets upon them. A path that will place them into ages-old conflict against Myro, a powerful wizard whom even the gods fear. Unequaled and undefeated, yet Myro has not taken over the world, a feat that should prove easy enough for him. The utmost in evil, discovering Myro's true goals will be the main goal throughout this and successive novels. That's a big undertaking just in that little paragraph there. Do you have anything did you prepare a short sample that you can read to us from Maldine?
Well, there is, get the book. There's a preface. It actually has a preface, an intro, and a prologue. The preface is sort of like the yardstick for us people from Earth.
Okay.
And that's the only time you'll hear Earth mentioned.
All right. We have about 2 minutes.
Okay. Preface it is. That's a couple of paragraphs. Picture a planet, giant Earth-swallowing sphere, swaddled green with the color of life. the glare of its giant blue star glistening off its atmosphere in colorful, almost aurora-like bursts of light. Picture three moons in an eternal cosmic dance around this large orb, the largest color the blue of Earth's sky, the next the green of deepest seas, and the largest the yellow of your own home star. Picture the swoop and whirl of these satellites as they leave no part of that orb with a moonless night, yet also none with a multiple romance of more than one. Picture a planet all filled with magic, mystery, and utter strangeness. Picture Maldine. Situated in the center of space, at the doorway to time, on the precipice of fate, such as Maldine. Birthed by the power of the eternal flame, seated by chaos, nurtured by the olden gods, and brought to fruition by the knowledge of the ancients, it lies centralized in a galaxy far from any stars known of the man of Earth. Fate and power of awesome proportions focused down upon this innocent yet mysterious realm, awaiting for the unfolding of the events that will lead the way to the fate of all.
Okay. Thank you. I wish you very much success with this. Where are you calling us from, Mark? I forgot to ask you that.
I'm in California.
Oh, you're in California. Okay.
Yeah.
And is it nice and beautiful there?
It was yesterday. It's kind of overcast right now.
Oh, okay. Well, it's kind of cold here in New Mexico, so enjoy that warmish weather that you have out there in California.
I'll try.
I think this is a very interesting concept. I wish you all the luck in the world with it, and I hope you are able to find that publisher who can give it the attention that it merits, because I do think that it has not just promise, but I think it has a lot of I think it tells a story that people will find enjoyable, entertaining, and thought-provoking, and I think that's always good if you can get that out of something that you've written.
Thank you, and it's been a pleasure being on the show.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Okay.
For those of you who are listening, we're wrapping up today's writer's block. I want to remind you that we are on every Tuesday morning, and I hope you will tune in next week. We will have – I'm trying to find my notes here. Oh, I know. Michael Siewert from Tom will be here talking about books, books, books. And I have a call-in guest who will be talking about he has done some grief writing. And we're going to be talking a little bit about how she's written about – she's interviewed people who have dealt with Valentine's. And since that's Valentine's Day, I thought that would be appropriate. And we'll also be talking about a book that she has written that is a Bible heroines, if you will. And we're going to be talking a little bit about that. Thank you so much for listening in. Let me know if you know any writers that would like to be on the air. Give me a call, and I'll give them a call. Have a good day.
Thank you, Sharon. And 9:56 and 34 degrees. That concludes the program today, Writer's Block, with your host, Sharon Van Dameer. We're going to go out with this song from this CD that Jose Vasquez just left. Jose Vasquez was Sharon's first guest. This is from his CD that he recorded. If you get a hold of Joe Vasquez, you may call him at 454-438-0437. That's 505-438-0437. And good morning to you, folks. That was the music from the CD of Jose Vasquez. He was Sharon Vandermeer's first guest this morning. This is KLVF FM 100.7 and KFUN AM 1230 on your radio dial. We now return to our regular program. And remember, put a smile on your face. Adios. God bless.
The head of a major breast cancer charity is calling it quits after a controversial decision.